Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast is with you once again. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I'll be your host. A little bit under the weather this week, so the voice a little more baritone than you might be used to, but that is okay. The majority of what you're about to hear is from Brewers beat reporter Tom Haudricourt. He's going to get you caught up on what's going on with the Milwaukee Brewers. They are in first place as we wake up on Monday morning. They just came off a road trip, one of their best in, really one of the best road trips in franchise history. 10 games, stops out west. They won 7 of 10. They took 3 of 4 from the Rockies, 2 of 3 from the Diamondbacks, and 2 of 3 from the Minnesota Twins. All three of those squads went to the playoffs last year. It did end on a little bit of a down note with a 3-1 loss Sunday, but nobody's feeling bad about the road trip. A pretty much unqualified success with the Brewers going 7-3. They now head into a 10-game homestand with the Diamondbacks. That same Diamondbacks team paying a visit, Zach Greinke on the hill Monday night, former Brewer, to face the Brewers. The Mets and Cardinals will follow them into town. Those are good teams, so the Brewers will have to maintain that A game that has put them in really nice position. They say you're not supposed to check the standings until Memorial Day. Well, that's a week away, and the Brewers are sitting pretty. So it is a good time right now to be a Brewers fan. My guest is Tom Haudricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He'll be checking out the action during this homestand as the Brewers open up on Monday against the Arizona Diamondbacks. And Tom, kind of an unqualified success on the road trip with the 7-3 record. It ended on a down note, but they win three series against three teams that went to the playoffs last year. A pretty exciting run for the Brewers. I guess just in general, right off the top, what's impressing you right now about this team? It seems like they finally got that offense turned around that was so sluggish for a while.
Yeah, I think that was the big turnaround, JR. If you look at the three losses, they got shut out in Colorado. They lost 2-1 in Arizona to Zach Greinke, who they have to face again tonight at Miller Park. And then yesterday, 3-1. So there was three games when they didn't hit. Those were the three games they lost. The other seven games, they scored a lot of runs, a lot of home runs, and they won those games. So I think the offense perking up in general was a big thing, especially some of the other guys towards the bottom of the lineup getting going. Manny Pena and Jonathan Villar had pretty good road trips. So the interesting thing now is, you know, Travis Shaw had a really nice road trip. But it almost seems like the offense runs around Jesus Aguilar now. And I'm not sure any of us saw that coming. You know, he was a bench player at the start of the year. Then Eric Thames went on the DL. Then Ryan Braun went on the DL. And now all of a sudden Jesus Aguilar is an everyday player. And managers always look to players to see who's going to step up when other guys are down. And Jesus Aguilar certainly fits that category.
No doubt. Homered four times in the three games in Minnesota. He's totally made people forget about the Thames injury, the Ryan Braun injury on top of that. So let's go back to the start of the year where it seemed like he was going to be the odd man out for a while. It ended up being probably nowhere near the odd man out because they ended up keeping four guys who could play first base with G-Man Choi even for just one day on the opening day roster. So it sounds like they really did everything they could to keep Aguilar, but how close do you think it was to this team saying, you know, we've got Ryan Braun, Eric Thames to play first base. That's a platoon right there that maybe Jesus Aguilar is just not going to be part of the plans. How close do you think that came?
Well, close numerically in that he was probably the last guy kept position player wise, but they never really wanted to lose him. And they knew, who don't know his roster status. He was out of options. And I believe, didn't you write a story about options, right?
Yes, I did. Yep, he is definitely out.
Yeah. And so they would have had to put him through waivers to send him to the minors. They had no illusions about him clearing waivers. If you look at what's going on, with four home runs and over the weekend, that's a guy that's not going to clear waivers. He'd be a perfect fit for so many teams as their DH. Certainly, an American League team would have claimed him. So they knew that that they had to keep him or lose him, and so they decided to keep him. And this is why. You know, he's also a good guy in their clubhouse too. A guy the players really like and rally around. He's kind of a quiet leader, and so. Just a really good fit on the team, and now you see why they did not want to lose him.
Right, he is part of that percussion band in the dugout you'll see from time to time. And I was most impressed with that last home run he hit off Jake Odorizzi. He accounted for the only run on Sunday. It was a really high fastball. He just crushed it. It was crazy, right into the, you know, just drove it out of the ballpark. So he is clicking on all cylinders. Brings me back then to the Braun injury. We haven't talked since he finally went down. I think fans and the players and the team kind of have all come to terms that he's going to be an on-again, off-again player in terms of availability with the number of injuries that he's had. I'm kind of curious, though, why you think the team waits so long to put him on the disabled list. And we've talked a little bit about this with the 10-day disabled list, that added flexibility the teams have. But it seems like Braun, they'll give him a few days before they decide that they need to give him the rest. Why do you think they're willing to go? I mean, because he's an older player at this point, looking at others on the team. Why do you think they give him that leeway and are willing to play shorthanded when, you know, it seems like a 10-day rest would be a good thing for him from time to time?
Well, just the fact that they weren't sure how bad it was, he did not, you know, obviously did not tell them he thought it was a long-term thing, or they might have proceeded differently. So, yeah, you do wait to see how long you can get by without somebody. The deal breaker for them was they were going to that interleague series in Minnesota where you need another bat. You know, you have to fill a DH role there. It's not maybe as acute of an absence when you're in the National League games because you don't have the DH. So they really wanted the extra bat. They brought G-Man Choi up. He hits a home run in his very first at bat too. So immediate success there. And yeah, it's always the last choice you want to do is put somebody on the DL. But the 10-day thing, especially with pitchers now, some teams sort of use the 10-day DL as rotation management. You know, a guy has a little sore arm, and then they can skip a turn, put him on the DL, and only miss one turn. You know, the Brewers sort of thought that was the situation with Zach Davies when they first put him on the DL a couple of weeks ago with rotator cuff inflammation. They thought that was a one-start thing. But then look what happened. He wasn't ready to come back after the 10 days. He went and pitched Saturday for Appleton. By all accounts, everything went great. So I expect him to be activated sometime this week. They haven't really indicated when yet. But there's another thing that you look at the road trip, and they went 7-3. They did it without arguably their numbers 1 and 2 starters, Chase Anderson and Zach Davies, both on the DL. Chase Anderson comes back tonight. But if I would have told you, looking at that schedule with Colorado, Arizona, and Minnesota, like you said earlier, three playoff teams from last year, if I would have said they're going to have to play that whole road trip without Anderson or Davies throwing a pitch, would you have predicted 7-3? Probably not.
Yeah, no chance, no chance. So Chase Anderson, like you said, with the illness, he does come back to pitch Monday night. Before I let go of the Braun topic, there's been some, you know, discussion about his numbers this year. Even when he's healthy, he has struggled this year. He's hit some major, you know, big home runs, so it's maybe not as clear as it would be another player who hasn't had those clutch moments. Is there any scenario where this team changes his spot in the lineup? You know, I would argue that doesn't matter all that much, but would they consider moving him down to fifth, sixth? Is that something Ryan Braun would be comfortable with? Do you think the team is looking at it that way, or are they still not alarmed by what, you know, we're still only here in the, we're not even 2 months into the season, so there's a chance this all turns around still.
Yeah, it's hard to assess his season. I wrote about that a few days ago about how it's almost impossible to assess his season because he's had a bunch of big hits, overall not so great, but a bunch of maladies too. You know, he's had a calf issue too. So it's very hard to assess where he is right now as a player. And I'm sure that's something that's going to hash out over time. You have to, it's always, whenever you make any type of moves like that, it's always what are our other choices too. You don't just say we're going to do this. You always have to feel you have a better choice. So we'll see. You know, Craig Counsell had a very good quote about older players. He said, "Age is undefeated," and age is undefeated. You know, Ryan is 34 now. He's had on and off problems with different things. You know, he had back surgery a couple of years ago, and as anybody will tell you, athlete or not, once you've had back surgery, you have a bad back. There's no such thing as back surgery and then everything's great for the rest of your life, you know. So that's something he's going to have to battle through here these last few years. And it's tough enough playing when you're healthy and you're in your 30s, much less when you're banged up. So we'll see going forward what the Brewers get out of Ryan Braun. But this is partially why they went for the 1-2 punch of acquiring Yelich and Kane over the offseason is they knew Ryan was later in his career and having health problems. And everybody said, what are you going to do with all these outfielders? Well, look, I mean, it hasn't been a problem. There's never been a situation, I don't think, this year where we've had to say, this guy needs to be playing, for any length of time. So that's the other kind of unspoken thing about the Brewers being in first place on this date is beyond the pitchers. They've had lots of other injuries as well. They've lost Corey Knebel for over a month, their closer. He's back now. But Eric Thames out now. They've had a bunch of injuries. This has been not been a healthy team in general, and yet they've still won, which is a testament to their depth.
So another question then about that depth is catcher, which is you said like you mentioned Manny Pena really started to come around here in this road trip, but they don't have a lot of catching depth in this organization. Jacob Nottingham was on the disabled list most recently. He was up for a while when Pena was injured, but Jett Bandy has really struggled in a backup role. He had a bad throwing error that cost him a run on Sunday, and he hasn't hit the baseball. I believe he's driven in just one run on a home run, his lone RBI of the year. I don't know what they could really do other than go outside the organization if they felt they needed to upgrade that spot. There's talk of Blake Swihart in Boston who's asked for a trade. I mean, I don't know if that's a path that's going to go anywhere for the Red Sox. But from the Brewers' perspective, do you think they're actively going to try and bring somebody in the way they did with Stephen Vogt last year to shore up the catching position?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that because they do have Nottingham and Christian Bethencourt in AAA. Bethencourt's played in the big leagues before, is a good catch and throw guy, can at least back up. Yeah, at least Manny Pena has started to hit. If he continues to hit, then he'll just continue to do most of the playing, and Jett Bandy will, not play that much. When the catching tandem here was Jonathan Lucroy and Martin Maldonado. Maldonado never hit much. He was always not an offensive threat, but he was such a good defensive catcher. You do want your backup guy to be a good catch and throw guy. Bandy has troubles with that at times. But as long as Manny Pena starts to pick it up at the plate, and he has over the last road trip, then I think, I don't think they'll be in a big hurry to do anything about that. When Nottingham came up, he looked okay, and he's a young catcher. They like his potential. And like I said, they have Bethencourt down there as well, and he has major league experience. So I haven't heard any rumblings about, looking for catching help. But that was tough, the Stephen Vogt thing. Tough for him and tough for them. He's a very good fit on their club, both on the field and off the field. And there's another big injury, that they've had to overcome. He was, probably slated to be on their opening day roster.
Definitely, yeah. So it wouldn't be a Brewers podcast if we didn't talk about the relief show, namely Josh Hader and Jeremy Jeffress. I know we go back to this well a lot, but you see Josh Hader strike out six dudes, get another multi-inning save on Saturday night, and once again stoke some national attention with the way that he's pitched. Jeremy Jeffress has been just as impressive. I saw you broach the subject with Craig Counsell, or actually Todd Rosiak was in Minnesota, so he was the one making the discussion about Cy Young possibilities for Josh Hader. And there's two issues with that, which I think are both pretty obvious. One is that he would have to sustain what he's doing right now, this unprecedented level of success, which is asking a lot over the course of the year. But also it would require Cy Young voters to sort of, get with the times of how middle relievers, quote unquote, are being used and really be willing to cast a ballot for a non-traditional a vote like Josh Hader versus, say, a Max Scherzer, somebody who starts a bunch of games. Do you feel like that's possible? Like, let's say he does sustain this or is reasonably close the whole year. Do you think Cy Young voters would actually, be willing to give him a look as a Cy Young candidate?
Yeah, I can't speak for, what voters will do. I do know that, people have reassessed a lot of the old norms in voting. A few years ago, people finally realized that one loss records are not that important because the starter does not really dictate what happens there. And even more so now, where it's become a bullpen game, a lot of starters are lucky they pitch 5 innings to even qualify for a victory. So we'll see. Another factor with the Brewers would probably have to go to the playoffs. It's usually team success is tied to individual success as far as postseason awards go. You don't see too many MVPs from last place teams. You do see them from contending teams. So, I mean, if he continues with the crazy strikeout numbers and the Brewers are a playoff team, then I think people might take a look at him because the game has changed now the way pitchers are used. And, he's not going to have a ton of saves, so he's not going to be a 40, 50 save guy. Most of the relievers who have been Cy Young winners, guys like Gagne, Raleigh Fingers, Dennis Eckersley, people like that, they were among the top, if not the top, save guys in the league too. So you're going to have to get it past that as well because he's not being used often enough to get 40 or 50 saves because he's being used in multi-innings, which means they have to give him some rest afterwards. So, he pitched Saturday night more than 2 innings. I'm not even sure when he'll be available again. Probably not tonight. So you just have to rethink just the way everybody is being used now. And I think voters are kind of catching on to the new way that players are being used in general, especially pitchers. But it's definitely something different. I don't know of any starters or non-closers that have won Cy Young Awards, so it would be, a breakthrough type thing if anybody didn't win it that wasn't a starting pitcher or a closer.
Jeremy Jeffress, this is not new territory, but he is, it's astonishing his career arc. He might, I don't know how many players are in an organization that has drafted them, has signed them as a free agent, and traded for them. And this is a guy who was drafted in 2006. It's not like he's been around for 20 years, but he has been sensational. I don't know where, I mean, where does he rank among the surprises on this team? I think Jesus Aguilar, who we talked about, is probably at or near the top. But Jeremy Jeffress has been just as special as Josh Hader, and his numbers in many cases are better.
Yeah, I mean, he's pitching the best he's ever pitched, probably over a length of time. He did pitch great for the Brewers before they traded him to Texas when he was their closer that year. But nothing like this. He's only been scored on one time all year. He's been used a lot also. This is not a guy that's been lightly used. He has way more appearances than a Hader. He's been nutty good. You always know you have a low ERA when you pitch a shutout inning and it hardly goes down.
Yes.
His ERA is so low that he pitches a scoreless inning and it only goes down a point or two, and we're still early in the season too. So you would think as a relief pitcher, you throw a scoreless inning and it'll go down. He has a 0.36 ERA. I mean, that's crazy. Been scored on, he's given up one run all year. And he's been a model of low whip as well. We talk about Hader, how nobody gets on base against him. In 24 and two-thirds innings, Jeffress has only given up 10 hits and 7 walks while striking out 23. He's a 30-year-old pitcher too, and the league has gotten several looks at him over the years. But he is different. And I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago, this split changeup that he picked up. He picked up the grip from teammate Junior Guerra. It's made him a completely different pitcher because they can't look hard for him anymore. He throws this ball that just breaks off the table. You don't want to get 2 strikes against him because he'll use that to bury you. And it's just been an amazing thing. It'll be interesting to see if both Jeffress and Hader can make the All-Star team. Like, would they pick, relief pitchers are chosen, not voted for. Would they pick 2 relievers off the same club? Well, if they keep this type of statistical excellence going, how do you not put them on the All-Star team?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think if I recall the way the process is set up, relievers wind up being sort of those guys that you use to get single team representation. Those are like some of the last guys that get out of the roster. So I imagine it'll be difficult to get both of those guys into the All-Star game, but they certainly deserve it to this point. They have been lights out. One of the big reasons why the Brewers are in first place. Let's move to some quick hitters. Freddy Peralta's sophomore outing was not as good as his debut. He walked a bunch of guys, walked six guys in four innings. Honestly, that didn't really surprise me given how the first outing had gone. There was a lot of fastballs, a lot of fastball movement. Gave me the sense that there would be a chance where we could see him walk some guys. That's exactly what happened against the Twins. Brewers did come back and win that game, and he did rack up a few strikeouts again. But I'm presuming he's going to go down to AAA with either Chase Anderson or Davies coming back. Do you think he helped his timeline, or do you think that they're still going to be pretty patient with him going forward? He's only 21 years old. Are they still going to take their time with him, or is he on the next bus that when they need somebody, he's next year back to Milwaukee?
Well, if he does end up going down with moves this week, I mean, look at the good he's done himself and also the organization. So, whenever you've come up and you've done what he did, even with the walks the second time around, he's still, he obviously has the talent and the arm to succeed at the big league level. Yeah, now they have a guy they can plan around. They still have Woodruff on their roster, and he's a guy that they really like, who they've brought up and down so much. I don't think he's really settled into a role yet. And so, this is all good. There's no such thing as too many pitchers. They've already used a bunch of pitchers. I think that eight different guys have started already. So, no one's going to ever argue about having that kind of talent. And it just bodes very well for the future. A lot of people wondered why the Brewers didn't go out and do an Arrieta or a Darvish, and beyond what they thought was an exorbitant price for those guys, they believe in their own system. And to have success in this market where you can't have a $200 million payroll, they're going to have to develop their own pitching, and they feel really good about that. And Freddy Peralta is one of the reasons they do feel good about it. So it's just all good as far as having that kind of pitching depth.
We've praised a lot of relievers, namely Jefferson Hader, as just mentioned. But how about Dan Jennings? He came out of Sunday's game with a 2.01 ERA. Craig Counsell's not afraid to use him multiple innings. He's obviously, as a left-hander, a guy who's very good at getting lefties out. But, man, he has been good. He's a guy that they brought in at the last minute. It's another example of a player that David Stearns or Doug Melvin before him brought in basically off the scrap heap into the organization after the season started, and he's been fantastic.
Yeah, they liked him a lot. They added him to the team one day into the season after he was released in Tampa Bay in what was basically a cost-cutting move. And, another multi-inning guy that they like a lot. He's also a workhorse guy, too. He's always pitched a lot of appearances during his career. He's a guy that, is going to end up probably pitching more than 70 times. And that's the kind of guy that they really like having in this bullpen. Boone Logan, who was on the DL and has really struggled to find his stuff because he's behind everybody else, well, they can be patient with him because they have Hader and Jennings as lefties as well. They have three lefties in their pen now, and if they can get Logan squared away, they'd have three lefties they can use in the clutch. So, the bullpen's been by far the best area of the team all year. It's why they're in first place, and so it's become a bullpen game. The Brewers, their bullpen innings are right up there near the top of the league. We'll see if they can sustain that type of usage over the full season. But that's always the challenge with any bullpen, is to try to keep them fresh. They were off last Thursday, but now they play again for a while. And so it's always a challenge to keep your bullpen fresh, especially when you use a lot of guys for multi-innings. But they play this entire 10-game homestand without a day off. They get a day off at the end of it. And so this is going to be a big homestand. Three with Arizona, four with the Mets, who have pretty good pitching, and then three with St. Louis. So it doesn't get any easier, but I'm sure they feel good to be home. They've played a pretty heavy road schedule. They had a three-city trip, came home for only five games, then another three-city trip. So 10 games at home, I'm sure, sounds good to the Brewers. They've been on the road a lot, and they've played great on the road, too. So They say win at home and break even on the road. Well, they've kind of flipped that script a little bit. They've had a great record on the road and kind of 500 at home. So now they have a chance to make some hay at home, but they have some difficult opponents coming up, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons it's easy to get excited about this team. The run differential wasn't good. You felt like it had a, you know, that they were going to get better offensively. They've played a lot on the road and done so well there. I mean, it feels like this team could be it has broken out over the past 10 days and maybe can keep that going into the homestand. The draft, speaking of well, we'll go from the present team to the future team. The draft is 2 weeks away. You look at first round mock drafts, there's no consensus on what's going to happen in the draft. And I'm sure that's true to a degree every year, but it feels very much in flux this year in particular. There's a guy from Waukesha. I did a story on Jared Kelenic, who could be, he's been looked at by the Tigers as a possibility for the number one overall pick. That would still be a little bit of a long shot, but it's at least in the conversation. And at the same time, it doesn't even seem like it'd be a shock if he fell all the way to 21 to the Brewers. That's sort of the flux we're talking about. Is there any, I don't know if there's really even a point in analyzing what the Brewers might do because it's best player available. It's an investment for basically 5, 6 years from now. But do you have any indication on what the Brewers are thinking? And I mean, how cool would it be to you if the Brewers were to end up with the local kid?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting if he's still on the board or they pick him. Be a lot of pressure on them and a lot of pressure on him if they pick a local kid. Right now the draft is the, I wrote about it in the Journal Sentinel Sunday, and this is a southeastern draft. All the, most of the top players are down in the southeast, in Florida and Georgia in particular. It's some years it's out west in California, but this year it's like in the southeast. And so we'll see how it goes. Right now it looks like, most people say Auburn right-hander Casey Mize is the best talent in the draft, and the Tiger, and everybody expects the Tigers to draft him. And then after that, I mean, it's 2 through 20 before the Brewers pick. It could be any combination of people, and so we'll see what they do. But they, when you're down at 21, this is where David Stern says that you have to trust your process because they're going to put a draft board together. And then when their pick comes, they'll look and see what the top name is on it, and that's who they'll pick because they do go with best available player. So people say, well, how in the world do you decide who to pick at 21? Well, you line your board up 1 through 21, and then whoever's the lone soldier remaining when you pick, that's your guy. That's how you do it.
Right. Tom Haudricourt, reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covering the Brewers. You can find his book on Amazon, 100 Things Brewers Fans Should Do Before They Die. And you can read all of his stuff at jsonline.com and in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thanks for joining us, Tom.
Thanks, JR.
That's all for today. Join us again soon as we get you caught up on what's going on with the Milwaukee Brewers. Check out the Travis Shaw bobblehead on Sunday. If you haven't seen it yet, it's pretty cool. The mayor of Ding Dong City is the sort of the theme. That's his nickname and the theme of the bobblehead. You should check that out if you get a chance. Sunday is when that will be given away at Miller Park. I'll have a story soon up at jsonline.com looking at my personal favorite player bobbleheads that the Brewers have given away at Miller Park. I believe I got a list of 12 for you that I like. So you can tell me where I was wrong or right when ranking my favorites. There's also plenty more at jsonline.com. Full Brewers coverage from Tom Haudricourt and Todd Rosiak. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you again real soon.